Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your questions on the line this evening are Meryl Pick from Old Mutual Investments and Mark Dutoy from Oyster Catcher Investments. Send those questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. We start off with Bloomberg content. Here's a quick take from UBS Global Head of Investment Communication on why the investor believes in the continuation of the equities bull market.
Well, we remain confident the S&P will move through 5,000 in 2022. So we very much still believe that the bull market remains intact. I think when it comes to watching out for what are some of the key risks, we talked about Omicron just there. I think on top of that, we have to layer on central banks and the Fed and the risk that they tighten too quickly. So we'll, of course, get the CPI on Friday, and their meeting next week will be key at looking at that. And then also China, where there's been headlines this morning around Evergrande. I don't think that's the issue per se, but if the Chinese government tightens regulation on property too much and slows that sector down too much, then that could have wider ramifications. So those are some of the risks we're watching. However, we still see growth as being very strong as we enter next year. Earnings growth are particularly strong as well. We think that should be sufficient to drive equities higher over the course of 2022.
So interesting insights there. Good evening, Meryl. Good evening to you too. Mark, I think the biggest question now for equity holders, right, is what is 2022 going to look like? So I'll start with you, Mark. Do you agree that you see the continuation of the bull market, or there'll be some forks on the road there?
Yeah, so, well, I mean, I guess it's prediction of S&P over 5,000. It's only 6% away from where we are now, so it's not a groundbreaking prediction. But I think that, we've had a very strong run over the last year. S&P was up around about 20% for the year. And it seems difficult to see that it'll continue at the same rate. We are expecting now the Fed to continue with its tightening cycle. So that's taking money out of the system, which is a headwind for equities, also potentially the back end of 2022 raising rates, which potentially could push up long bond yields, which is another headwind for equity valuations. So overall, I think it is going to be a bit more of a bumpy ride. And I think you are going to see quite a lot of shifting between the sectors, and the darlings of this year might not necessarily be the darlings of next year. Okay. A rotation. High valuation stocks into kind of maybe the more economy-based, more mundane stocks for next year.
Okay, Meryl, do you share the same sentiments?
I would broadly agree. I think given we've come off such a low base, it was easy to see why a recovery and a reflation trade was in play. But the longer that we move through that, I think one has to be more selective about actually looking for opportunities. And also, I think the growth that we've seen in this year, we mustn't forget it, there's a lot of base effects, in that. And going into the pandemic, there was some concern about the sustainability of growth structurally in the long term. So I think when considering that also at a point where valuations are high, you've then got to really pick carefully which are the sectors and the stocks that have got tailwinds and positive themes behind them that can drive growth irrespective of the macro over the next 5 years.
Okay, interesting. And for long-term investors, that's very important, right? So let's jump straight into our questions this evening. This is coming from Alex via our email line. It says, will the merger of BHP Petroleum Assets and Woodside result in Woodside obtaining a secondary listing in the JSE? If not, how will SA domicile shareholders receive unbundled shares in the newly formed company? Mark, very technical question.
I mean, at the moment, what's been announced is collapsing the dual listing structure.
Okay.
So that makes it easier for Billiton to do deals in the future. And one of the touted ideas is that they will demerge their interests in oil through the Woodside demerger. So, but it hasn't been announced, and the actual mechanism on how they'll do that hasn't been announced either. I mean, if you are a BHP Billiton shareholder, I don't think you need to worry that you're not going to get the value. Should the demerge go ahead, you're not going to lose out. Potentially, there would be a secondary listing on the JSE, and that's one of the ways they could do it. But I think until it's actually announced, we won't be able to. We don't know the final detail on how it's going to be put together.
Yeah, but they always make a plan for local shareholders, so you shouldn't worry too much on that side. Nick Headley here on Twitter is asking, well, he's saying Renergen and big question mark. So, Meryl, what are your thoughts on Renergen and its future prospects, I guess?
I suppose renewables are a strong theme for the foreseeable future. We've seen so much pressure from climate change perspective in terms of moving into alternative sources of energy production. So they would have that as a structural theme going for them. I haven't looked through, let's say, the financials, the balance sheet, et cetera, to see, is the financial case solid? But certainly, structurally, the shift is in their favor, technology shift is in their favor.
Interesting. Any thoughts on Renergen, Mark?
I think that the CEO, Stefano Marani, has done a fantastic job in promoting the company. I mean, they are busy laying down the infrastructure, so they're not profitable yet. I mean, this is still a story about the future. And the big play is the helium gas. I don't know that market's particularly well, but I believe that there is a shortage worldwide. And if you're going to launch satellites and space rockets, you do need helium. And so there's quite a lot of hype around the stock. I mean, for us, we would wait to see a bit more a bit more runs on the board and kind of operationally where it goes from here. But, from what I've read, it seems like the infrastructure rollout is going according to plan. And soon they will start being able to sell their gas resources, and then we'll be able to see the cash flows starting to flow from there.
Yeah, and there's still, that narrative that maybe someone bigger than them with the, deeper pockets will buy them and obviously use the license to extract the gas from where they found it. Okay, so Russell is asking us, says, good evening. Down a tenth one day, up a tenth the following. I am getting nosebleeds following South 32. And although this is a solid mining counter with international credentials, the whiplash the share price has experienced belays the dissonance surrounding this counter. Still want to hold for the long term? Meryl?
Sure, yeah. So I guess it's one of the junior miners now. We know that it's been spun out of BHP. I think the commodity mix has caught a bit of a wind at its back at this point in time. I think aluminium in particular has been in strong demand, and the price has been phenomenally strong. But anytime something is phenomenally strong, it does worry me in terms of how sustainable it can be, although at this point in time they're generating fantastic cash, so probably a hold for now.
Okay, so you're saying a hold for now. So I'll take one more question, which is also around mining, by Lulama. Says, would you please ask your panel to give us their view on Royal Bafokeng, Implats and Northam? So that triple threat there, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, interesting. I think everyone was kind of expecting Implats to make a play for Royal Bafokeng. So their mines are adjacent to each other, and Implats is already mining some of Royal Bafokeng's reserves on a licensing agreement. And then Northam came kind of a bit from left field and bought Royal Bafokeng holding shares. So, and they're continuing to buy in the market. I mean, there was an announcement today to say that they've taken their holding up to 34.95%, which is just below the threshold where they have to make an offer to all shareholders. So it's definitely something that Northam sees in Royal Bafokeng. It's not that obvious because, like I said, the synergies are obvious with Implats. So, why Northam is getting involved is a little bit less clear. But yeah, I mean, they both want to own World Buffer King, and Northam paid 180 Rand for most of its stake, and Implats is offering 150. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Well, South Africa's GDP contracted more than expected in the third quarter compared to the previous 3 months, with the Omicron variant, now expanding the risks to economic growth. Here's what Investec chief economist Annabel Bishop had to say about the fourth quarter.
Data we've been having from doctors in South Africa who've been treating the cases is that it's very contagious, but it seems to have, and I'll use the word seems, to have much milder symptoms than the Delta variant had. So we've got much lower hospitalization in South Africa from it. And if that's the case, and if this proves to be more virulent and actually pushes out Delta from the scene, that's actually more of a positive than a negative, because you're getting a virus that's replacing, you know, the one that gives you a more severe situation, you know, higher fatalities, with one that gives you less fatalities, that's less severe. So that could be a positive. But as you and I, you know, we're talking about just now, it's too early to say. So if, you know, we do carry on with this 50,000 cases a week, you know, as opposed to actually dropping back towards a lower figure, which the last few days' data has seen, then as I said to you, we're looking at that, you know, maybe 0.5% GDP growth for the fourth quarter.
You know, macro issues are always hard to ask, especially in our context here in South Africa, because what do you compare the GDP numbers to? I mean, we had the looting in the other quarter. Last year, this time, there was nothing happening. So, the base numbers are looking ridiculous. So, your thoughts on GDP numbers? I'll start with you, Meryl, actually.
Yeah, you're right. I think the base comparisons are tough. I think what we do know, we are in a cyclical recovery still relative to, let's say, the worst of 2020.
Yes.
And at the same time, some of our structural issues haven't gone away. So structurally high unemployment, you know, we can go on and on about labor, education, et cetera, et cetera. So I think for a while, the trajectory will be reasonable just because the base is so low. Omicron is not great. The looting is not great. But, you know, since I think the mid 20th century, we've never had a pandemic that lasts for more than 3 years. So we're 2 years in, one more year, guys. And the reopening should be here. So at least the tourism and all that can resume. But we know that South Africa's got structural issues to sort out. So I think that's almost for me the thing that I'd rather focus on and see reform to unlock.
Yeah, just to add to that, Mark, I mean, we had our unemployment numbers come out last week. We saw, you know, 3 out of 4 youth are not, well, are unemployed, and they have no prospects of, you know, what to do next. And no one in, you know, in government came out and said anything about those numbers. So you just, you know, brush it under the carpet like it never happened. So, I mean, where to from here, South Africa, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have structural unemployment, and although, you know, if we can get decent GDP growth going, we can get the economy growing, we will suck more people into the formal employment sectors. But, you know, whether it's going to be enough to really solve the problem is under debate. And I mean, I know that the government is looking at introducing more kind of support measures. I mean, there's a lot of talk about a universal basic income grant, which South Africa just basically can't afford. So perhaps some other kind of new grant, because unfortunately, the economy is just not big enough to employ all the people. And, you know, the structural problems aren't going to solve themselves in the next kind of 5 years. So there is going to be some kind of additional support measures needed.
Yeah, I think you're holding back there on me, Mark. So I'll ask you another easier question. So J.E. Jacobs is asking, could the panel please give an assessment of the recovery of Ellie's? The share price has doubled over the last month. Obviously, this was inspired by a tweet that's been going viral on Twitter currently. Someone made 4 times their money on Ellie's, and everyone is asking questions around it. So it's always fun to see on social media.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a very small company. I don't know it well. I think it's got somewhere around a 300 million rand market cap. So it doesn't look expensive. But, you know, other than retail investors, there's not a lot of well, there won't be any institutional investors that can own the stock. So, you know, when we're looking at the smaller cap space, unless we can see a company that has serious growth ahead of it, it's very difficult for us to own a piece of that company. I mean, you land up with a sizable stake and not being able to get in or get out. And, you know, in worst cases, you end up trying to manage the company too. So I think it doesn't look expensive. It probably can go up. Maybe someone comes along and wants to buy it out at a premium. But for us, we wouldn't be able to play in that space.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was almost 11 years ago now, I bought this around, you know, 60-something cents. It went all the way to 10 bucks, and look at where it is today. So I don't know, this feels like deja vu. But let's move on from this one. Johan de Brain is asking, please do Tiger Brands for me. Been buying under 190. I love old people. Meryl?
Ooh, Tiger Brands, tricky one. So, I mean, it's been the perennial turnaround story.
Yeah.
Frustratingly so. We know, I mean, it's traded well above 200 Rand in the past. So I think the execution issues that come up in division after division over time concern me. That's the one thing. I think also we've seen competitors like Rhodes Food Group make inroads into market share gains where they really should not have, where it almost looks like Tiger Brands has been asleep at the wheel in terms of innovation. And then, we did an interesting exercise at the beginning of this year to calculate how much bread would South Africans have to eat for bread margins to go back up to where they have been historically. And we did not like the answer because within the market, so much capacity has been put in that bread business is just very competitive. And I don't see them getting back to the historic margins anytime soon. So I wouldn't be too excited about Tiger Brands. There are other food producers that excite me a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, the big issue with any FMCG company that's fighting all these smaller woke FMCG companies is the fact that advertising is really cheap now. Back in the days, you could just, you know, slap a Tiger Brands cool advert, at prime time for a lot of money, whereas competition couldn't afford that. Today, social media, you know, you can go viral, doing something cool on YouTube or whatever, and that's who you're competing with here. In terms of scale, yeah, that's very important, but if you've got the money, which is a lot of individuals or a lot of funders actually have that, so it makes it very interesting and very competitive, and the outcome is, you know, great for the consumer. Let's talk about REITs. So this one says, mine is around Mzansi REITs. One, would you advise in investing in the current economic situation? Two, which one of the following offers best value for the long term? Is Vukile, I think that's Hermesin, or FFA or FFB? So that's Fortress.
Yeah, so I guess, so Fortress, we have the fight between the A shareholders and the B shareholders. I mean, you've got the big institutional players owning the A shares, which are entitled to the dividend ahead of the B shares. The B shares are held by management. So there's a bit of an issue there in terms of incentivization. But the underlying assets look fine in Fortress. Vukile's results recently were actually the results out of Spain were actually better than expected. I mean, Lawrence Rapp has had a difficult time through COVID. But, I think that Vukile, you know, they have the exposure to Spain and they have the exposure to South Africa. So I guess out of the three, that would be my pick. Hammerson, I don't know that well. So out of the three, I would pick Vukile.
Yes. Meryl, would you say anything about Hammerson? And which one would be your pick in the three?
Yeah, I don't know the REITs very well. I think Hammerson, from what I do know, is a play on UK retail. So perhaps there's something there as the UK opens up post their vaccination rollout and restrictions. But yeah, I don't know any of those too well.
Okay, no, not a problem. Here's one that I found quite interesting. It says from Patrick Msibi, Afrimat versus Robex, which one of the two is a good buy at the moment? Meryl?
That's a tricky one. So I think for Afrimat, I would say has got optionality. The management team has done quite well to kind of buy up secondary and small ore bodies. I think at the moment they do have quite a bit of dependency on iron ore within their income mix. So that would worry me a bit. Raubex is nice and straightforward construction company, not as cheap as it was a year ago. But I think with South Africa's renewables infrastructure programs, they stand to get a lot of work. There is just a lot of road repair work, municipal work that needs to flow through probably once COVID allows for more of that. And so there definitely is work to be done. And they are one of two or three remaining construction companies with a balance sheet to do it.
Yes.
Between the two, probably I would say Raubex, because I would be less concerned about a commodity price coming off.
Okay, so Raubex. Mark, can you quickly do Avenge? I mean, they're doing that consolidation. You know, the meme world is asking, you know, the big question. So what happens from here? What does it mean?
Yeah, so basically what it means is instead of Avenge being, you know, trading 6 cents, 7 cents, it's, I don't know the actual number of hand, but it'll be trading like kind of 40 cents versus 41 cents. So it creates a lot of more liquidity in the market. A bit easier for people to trade the share. You don't have a big bid offer spread, but it doesn't actually change the business in any way. So perhaps maybe more interest because more people might look at the share, but the underlying business hasn't changed. I mean, I think the underlying business is actually in a lot better shape than what it was before, and it's not expensive, but it is a construction stock, and those are tricky because your margins are thin, and if you have a project that goes wrong, you know, you're making losses and you're going to try and get paid.
Okay, so I have to take your stock watch. Sorry to disturb you there, Mark. I'll start with you, Mark. Your stock pick for the evening.
Yes, so my stock pick is BTI, British American Tobacco. So they came out with a pre-close today, and revenues are growing at 5% in constant currency. I think the big news is that they announced they're going to be close to their 3x net debt to EBITDA level, which means they can start returning a bit more to shareholders. And I think the preferred way for them to do that, they hinted, would be in a share buyback program. So you're going to get underpinned from share buybacks coming through. The rollout of their next generation products, the heat not burn and the vaping products, is going well and growing, you know, as expected. And I think you get a good 7% dividend yield and 5% growth and maybe kind of a 12-15% return a year in rents.
Okay. Meryl, your stock pick for the evening?
It is interesting. I'm going back to your starting question about equities. Both Mark and I have got defensive picks. I'm going for multi-choice.
Okay.
So I think for a couple of reasons, we've got now this Omicron variant. I think we've got another year of on and off lockdowns to go. Multi-choice from that perspective is quite defensive. It's a lockdown stock, a stay-at-home stock. But also they've got a large market share in most of their markets. Obviously in South Africa, the premium end is quite mature, but the growing volumes in their mass and middle market products. It's trading above a 6% dividend yield. It's not too demanding on a 12 forward PE, and very cash flow generative, and I think quite defensive for quite a few years until something like Netflix can become mainstream.
Okay, and I like the wife on Showmax, so there's a, you know, a cherry on top there. So multi-choice for you, and Mark, it's I'm forgetting your stock pick. British American Tobacco. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks to my guest, Meryl Pick from Old Mutual Investments and Mark Dutoy from Oyster Catcher Investments. Stockwatch is back tomorrow. Same time, same place. Have a good evening.